It's the Shea Anything Podcast. Doug Williams alongside Andy Martino talking Mets in your podcast feed as always. Just search Shea Anything if you haven't subscribed yet. Please do. Then rate us and review us. A quick note before we get to the Mets stuff.
Quick note.
Last week, challenged a couple viewers to, if they had issues with Andy and his phone, to get to us about some details. Let us know. What is it exactly that Andy's doing on his phone during shows that bothers you? Here's the response that I've gotten, and I've gotten a couple of responses from people saying, yes, I can hear Andy's phone. Mm-hmm. When he locks it, you hear the click. Do it.
Wait a minute. That didn't do it.
No, just do it. Yeah,
there you go.
That click.
Is that what it is?
So Andy, instead of being like, oh, that's the issue, I will no longer do that, has not only said, well, tough you know what.
Right.
I'm going to keep doing it.
Right, of course.
You now, right before the show, I said, okay, your phone's on loud. Why don't you just put it on silent and you'll see a text or a phone call come in? And he said, no, why would I do that? So if you're bothered by the audio of Andy's phone.
Don't blame Doug. He tried.
Yeah, I tried.
Listen, here's the deal, folks. You're listening. This is what's cool about this listening experience, other than the dulcet tones of Doug Williams. You're hearing a middle of the workday newsroom situation. Doug and I are sitting in the newsroom. We come into the studio, and the calls and texts and whatnot that I have put out through the morning and early afternoon do not stop simply because we're recording. We are less polished, we are less formal than a television broadcast, so you're hearing the process, the magic.
Okay. That's a reasonable explanation. And, you know, I have tons of phone calls and texts coming in, you know, on the reg. Source evaluators and, you know, GMs and players. Lots of just current players texting me, hey, this is going on. You know, that's just always happening.
Mike Trout just texted you and said, good point about the phone. See you.
It's funny because it's not live.
Well, he's listening to the feed in the newsroom.
I don't know how Mike figured that out. anyway, so speaking of Andy's reporting, he has a column out on SNY.TV, whether it's out yet or imminent.
No, it's out.
It's out. Basically, the gist of the column, Andy, is that Syndergaard and DeGrom pretty much aren't available right now in the Mets' eyes. However, Wheeler and Mats are very much available.
Yes, correct. Now, this is a significant change from what I was hearing a couple weeks ago. We've talked about this a lot, of course, that the Mets were in a period of several weeks where the future of the franchise, the near future at least, of the franchise was at stake. We were having that conversation long before Sandy Alderson stepped aside as GM and made it even significantly more uncertain,
right,
the franchise, generally speaking. But they were weighing, I heard people in that organization really making a case for why it might make some sense to trade DeGrom, facilitate a faster rebuild, get a package like the White Sox got for Chris Sale. Now, there's a whole other side debate over whether that's a good or a bad thing.
Right.
I would argue that that hasn't proven to be a good trade yet.
A discussion we've already had.
But baseball people, because, like, I'll put it this way. Jim Duquette, who I ran that by, was like, no, that was a good trade for the White Sox. That's a good model. So we'll see. But anyway, and not just Jim Duquette, but I throw his name out there because he's an opinion that I really respect as far as a former GM. So they were thinking about that. I kept on it over the next couple of weeks, of course, to see what they continued to think about it. And what I'm hearing now is that it's really, really unlikely they'll move DeGrom or Syndergaard. I don't want to say never because then it could come back and bite me if they change their minds.
Mm-hmm.
And there's three GMs right now, so you never know what's going to happen.
Change their minds, literally,
yeah,
plural.
Right. And for all I know, I'll say this. There may be an internal debate still going on, but what I'm being told is definitely different. And it's like, unlikely that they trade those guys, and that Mats and Wheeler are the ones now that they would look at trading. Now, of course, you wonder what you get back from Mats and Wheeler despite how well they're pitching, and that's another thing they're going to have to figure out as they make calls over the next couple weeks. No trades are imminent. Nothing's close. Nothing's too hot, but there's certainly in-trade talks all the time. That's what you do in July.
Here would be my follow-up question to your reporting. So if they're trying to keep Syndergaard and DeGrom, that would lead you to believe that they're trying to compete before 2020, trying to compete as early as next season. So if you're going to deal from a strength, why trade Wheeler and Mats and not Syndergaard and DeGrom? Aren't you then compromising mm-hmm. next year's team while holding on to your most valuable pieces?
I think it's a good point about next year's team. It's really hard to envision how they're good next year. I don't mean that they can't be good next year. I mean, like, how should that look if they were? And what I've heard from Mets people post-Alderson stepping aside is that they want to be, moves have to be like hopefully to them, aimed at being good next year. They're not looking to do a big rebuild. However, we don't know who the general manager is going to be at the winter meetings. So it's very, very hard to speak to or think about long term right now. So I would say, fair question. Everything's so up in the air with them right now. But when you say specifically to DeGrom and Syndergaard, this is the vibe I'm getting. Separate answer for the two different guys. Jacob DeGrom is just too good to part with, I think. And there's some cold feet there that I think is legitimate. I've never been in favor of trading DeGrom. I've probably been able to be convinced a little as the weeks have gone by people who disagree with me that there's logic there at least. But I don't believe that. I mean, he's just so good. And I think that he's the type of pitcher who will be good when he's 34 or 35, mm-hmm. as long as he's healthy, because he knows how to pitch. He's got guts. He's got pitchability, which means that he it's not just that he's rearing back and throwing hard. He knows where he's putting it. He knows how to get hitters out. So that's the guy I keep. And with Syndergaard, for a while, I think they were really looking to get serious about moving him in season, and he just hasn't pitched. He's got a rehab start, of course, in Brooklyn on Sunday. But with the talent that he has, is this really the time to get full value? Maybe. Maybe a team like the Brewers or the Braves or someone who really needs pitching can still blow you away because they really want to make the playoffs this year. So I wouldn't say never, but it just, to me, the vibe is like Noah Syndergaard's someone who you might hear a lot about GM meetings, winter meetings, more so than this July.
I just, my opinion is if you're going to compromise the future, do it all the way. You know, Wheeler and Matz, this is the strength of the team right now. The starting rotation, with the way that Wheeler and Matz are pitching, and Noah Syndergaard, you'd have to believe, will come back soon. Jacob DeGrom's obviously lights out. That's the strength of your team. And you have the ability to leave it as the strength of your team next season. But for some reason, you're considering trading half of that, obviously the worst half, but half of that starting pitching core, leaving the other half, while getting rid of the guys whose contracts are expiring, obviously Cabrera and Jerry's Familia.
Blevins.
Potentially Blevins, and potentially Todd Frazier's got another year on his deal. We'll see. But, again, my opinion on this, Andy, is this whole time, you and I have had this conversation many times. You've said, I'm anti-trading Jacob DeGrom. I just don't understand it. He's too good. What are you going to get back? Prospects aren't sure things. Blah, 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 blah. It's too risky. I see that point. I just also see the point where if you are going to try and sell, you want to shake things up, think outside the box. That was John Rico's phrase. Mm-hmm. I don't see how you do that while half-assing it.
You know, Doug,
it's not about effort.
This is a family show.
It's not about...
Unless that ass is in the jackpot, I don't want to hear about it on this
look,
show.
Look, we've talked about ass in the jackpot. I don't see why I can't use half-ass.
Look at you. Breaking out of the box yourself.
That would be my opinion on that.
I think that's logical. I think maybe I would keep, it's tough. I advocated so many different times for trading Wheeler over the years.
Look,
I think
their value will never be
that.
Higher. So but, I get that. They're both pitching great.
I think baseball is so unpredictable with how you can be good year to year. It looks right now like how are the Mets going to be good for a while. But you just never know. You didn't think the Braves were going to be good this year. One didn't think the Nationals were going to be bad again, or this bad. So there's always, like, if you can keep those guys and make a few tweaks around the fringes and say, like, hey, maybe we can actually be a wild card team next year, I get that. I can sympathize with that viewpoint. I might hold on to all those pitchers with the hope of doing that. When we look at it in a vacuum and how the team looks, it's like, come on, they've got so many issues. How could they possibly be significantly better next year? But I just think that these are tough decisions. I'm glad they're not mine.
Yeah. We got an interesting tweet that I know you liked from at UK Mets Online.
Oh, I want to appreciate UK Mets Online. She tweeted me a number of times. Gracious. And I, oh my God, do I love your city if you're in London.
Shout out for the UK Mets fan base.
I love London. You lived in London.
I did briefly, yeah.
You just love London?
I worked at the Olympics. London's fantastic.
Oh, my God.
It's a great spot.
I want to go to London now.
Is there any chance the Mets can strip down this offense with a C? That's how you know it's legit. Keep Syndergaard and DeGrom and make a run at Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, instantly become contenders in 19.
It says in a shout out for the UK Mets fan base.
I just
cool.
gave that as the.
But I wanted to make sure that
that's true.
Included that phrase.
That's true. Yeah. Wanted a shout out. Bryce Harper, Manny Machado.
Both of them?
Both of them.
Okay, let me pick this. So what we're saying is keep Syndergaard DeGrom, make a run at Harper Machado. Yeah, that's what I would do. Honestly, that's what I would do. I think that they should dig in with the strengths that they have and add. I've said this many times. Screw a rebuild.
How about the idea that thinking that they should do that is different from realistically expecting it?
Funny that you should mention that, because I was next going to say that they're not going to do that. I think
they'll try.
Sign Harper and Machado?
Not both.
I don't think they'll be serious on either of those guys. No, I don't. I'm not saying that definitively, but that's not
Machado.
The vibe I'm catching. Why wouldn't they? Because they don't see them. They didn't go after. They haven't gone after an elite free agent since Cespedes, and it was their guy. Their habit has not been to play in that aisle.
But you know what's funny is I was having a conversation.
I've been told that it's probably a fantasy to think that they're going to sign Machado. But again, we don't know who the GM's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to Jim last week. He was talking about the Pedro and Beltran.
Yeah.
Off season, and it's possible that ownership after the season will say, okay, we kept Syndergaard and DeGrom for a reason. Just do something that makes us exciting, which doesn't necessarily make you good, but, I mean, Manny Machado makes you good, and it's exciting. I think birds, one stone.
That's a guy that you – and I'll tell you what else. I was going to say that's the guy you build around, obviously. And I'll tell you what, Doug, if they don't sign Manny Machado, guess who probably will? Guess. Come on.
Braves. Phillies.
No, the Phillies. Yeah, the Phillies. That's seen in the industry as the front runner for Machado.
Dude, it's dangerous right now if you're the Mets because the Braves and Phillies want to spend. Like, they're in a position right now where they're A, good, and B, trying to add. Like, think about the Braves for the record. I know they just rebuilt, but they've had exciting, fun-to-watch players the last couple of years. I mean, they kind of started this Matt Kemp resurrection. They had Matt Adams last year. They've had Freddie Freeman this whole time. I don't know. Just from the last couple of years of doing Mets pregame and postgame here on SNY, I've watched a lot of Braves baseball, and a lot of their pitching's been bad. They have had fun-to-watch position players for the last couple of years. They have been tolerable. They now have a new stadium. Obviously, they're winning, so it's different now. The Phillies are going to spend a ton of money.
Yeah. You know what? It's interesting you mentioned the Braves thing, though, is a really good case study, too, for why the Mets should be really careful about doing anything that takes them out of it for next season. Because if you look at the Braves at the end of last season, right, they could not have been more of a dumpster fire as an organization and in a place that looked so far from being anything legit. They were having a hard time getting people to take their GM job.
Right.
They were engulfed in scandal almost all the way to the top, with the violations that eventually led to their former GM being banned from baseball for life, hanging out with Henry Mejia somewhere on the banned list. And, no, I'm serious. So it's like the
Pete
Braves.
Rose.
Yes, and Pete Rose. The Braves are so far ahead of where anyone smart thought they would be. You never know.
I agree. I partially agree with you, and I partially disagree. The scandal stuff was interesting for us and people in the game because we were like, oh, my gosh, this is so juicy.
No, but it meant that there was so much instability in the organization is what I'm saying. I'm not saying.
But the on-the-field product is all fans care about, and I think the fans knew that they had these guys in the pipeline.
I'm talking about on-field product. I'm talking about the fact that the Braves were regarded as a job in the industry that what GM would want to touch that job. Alex Anthopoulos walked into a gold mine, as it turns out. I'm making the point that it's very hard to predict from one year to the next who's going to need a long rebuild and who's going to be okay soon.
True.
That's all.
And I'm making the point that
I take your point about how they had young players coming up, but these things can look differently too. The Mets, I'm not going to pump the Mets farm system, but they just advanced, like the MLB pipeline stuff has a significantly better write-up of them at the midseason point than they did in spring training.
Right.
These things can change fast.
I just love, take Ender Inciarte, perfect example, right? He came up probably too early. But the Braves necessarily didn't care about winning when he first came up, and he is now a legitimate player. So, like, they let him get his feet wet when rebuilding while bringing in exciting older players to let the maturity happen for their youth.
You mean Swanson?
No, I'm talking about Ender Inciarte. Like, we've been watching him for years, right? But now he has turned into a legitimate, not star, but he's a solid player. They have called up their young players at times where winning wasn't important to let them get their feet wet in a an environment where they could succeed? Like the opposite of what Ahmed Rosario was put in this season.
I don't know. I mean,
like Ahmed Rosario was put into
If you look at Dansby Swanson, for example, he was sent down. He struggled.
Yeah, no, he's struggled.
So it's like there's the whole same question. Is this a guy? Is this not a guy after the hype? Well, so what's better about – I mean, what is instructive about the way the Braves have done this?
I like the idea that if you're rebuilding, you can call up young talent and not have a ton of pressure on them to win right away. Ahmed Rosario,
you mean just because they're in Atlanta versus New York?
No. Because they're in a situation where you're expected to win versus
not. Oh, well, you know you're going through a rebuild.
Right. Think about Ahmed Rosario, right? Shortstop is supposed to be the captain of the infield, basically, unless you want to look at catcher that way, which is fair. But you have the one young guy on your team, really in your – is at shortstop, the guy with the least amount of experience on a team that was expected to win that has a lot of pressure on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not, in my opinion, a position to succeed for a young player. Now, I don't know if I'm coddling him. I probably am. But I like the idea of the Mets kind of cleaning house entirely and having, like, McNeil, Nimmo, Conforto, Rosario, like, youth all around.
Sound like a prospect nerd now.
Well, I'm just saying that would be a good way to get a look at these guys without the pressure of win now on
them. I think those
them.
Decisions have to be made by player development people on an individual basis, not as a wave. Are they ready? Is this where's this guy in his development?
True.
Where's this guy
it's
in
not,
his development?
It's more specific than I'm making it. I don't know. I want the Mets' young players to get called up into a position where it's not this like we will call for you to be sent down if you don't produce in the first week of.
Well,
you
they
being
didn't
here
do that for Rosario. Rosario got to practice bunting on the field like he was 16 years old.
But that's it's strange what's happening with him combined with where this
a lot
team
of things are strange these days.
So we got an interesting tweet, and it's going to lead to a kind of a bigger conversation from Tim Blackburn. Love the podcast. Thanks for all you do to make it entertaining. Thank you, Tim. Can you give us an update on Cespedes? Will we ever see him again? Is his condition David Wright chronic? Do you have a sense of what is going on? I'll let you answer that because you're smart and have actual information.
You're smart, Doug. Well, you're. Don't. I want you to sell yourself short here. Will we ever see him again? Yeah, I've told this story recently, though. I might have told it to Doug. I took my son, like, actually just to see a game rather than work at a game earlier this season on a Sunday afternoon. We were sitting down the left field line, kind of on top of the left fielder. And I pointed down to my six-year-old son at Cespedes, and I said, watch that guy. That's kind of the big home run hitter. That's an exciting player. That's a guy to watch. He's like, okay. And then, like, had fun, had a hot dog, whatever. Then, like, a couple innings later, my son was like, what's that guy? He told me that. I looked down, and there's Brandon Nimmo. And little did I know, that was the end of Cespedes.
Wow. Yeah.
That was it. That was when they hit it.
By the way, how about the fact that when we talked about the injury, we warned Mets fans that it sounded like, and this was coming, I think, from information that you had learned, it sounded like Cespedes' injury was not going to be solvable on a 10-day DL stint.
Yeah.
It was like, look, the Mets know that he can probably play with it and hobble around or be out for a significant period of time, and the latter has been what has happened.
Yeah, so, and we're going to have a, you want to start the bigger Cespedes? Well, let me just answer this question, and we were planning on having a longer conversation about Cespedes. He's running in Port St. Lucie. Will you ever see him again? Sure. He's not done playing. No, he's not. It's not David Wright situation right now yet. As far as we know, we're all going to die someday. But at the moment, he's okay.
If your Shea Anything Bingo had, we're all going to die from Martino. There you go.
But you're going to see him again before he dies. How's that?
If you had death, religion, love, any of those, yeah, we're on our way.
Speaking of religion, the gentleman who tweeted at me saying that I was underselling the rational aspect of Catholicism, I would like you to please, I interacted with you on Twitter, if you're listening, send me that email. I said, email me about why belief in God is rational, and I will read it on the show, and we will engage it. I don't believe you emailed me. Do it. We'll
All of
talk
our
about
listeners
it next
are
week.
Like, I'm so happy he doesn't have that email to read right now.
Hey, no, why?
Why should we talk about Catholicism and religion on a Mets podcast?
Why should Doug Williams underrate the intellect
I'm not
and range
saying
of our
anyone
listeners.
Listening is not intellectual enough to
You're
understand
speaking
it.
For our listeners.
I'm saying that they don't want they're trying to listen to Mets talk. They don't want to talk about church, religion, and
they don't want to talk about your Saturday night either, but we shove that down their throats.
I think they okay, whatever. Cespedes. Looking back at signing him. We've done this a couple times this season, But the fact that he hasn't played and it's July 5th, mm-hmm. I mean, he's played, but not in a long
Hardly,
time.
Hardly, since the day my poor little son had to look at Brandon Nimmo instead.
Oh, man. I find this common thread, Andy, with a couple of the contracts the Mets have given out, which is we were clamoring for it to happen. We thought it had to happen. Then it happened, and it has gone poorly. I don't know what to do.
I never clamored for that contract. My hands are clean. I thought that they should have let him walk twice, and they never let him walk.
What would your, hypothetically speaking, if you hadn't signed him after 2015, what would your team have looked like? Would you have thought that team could have been legitimately a competitor in 2016 without him? Because I thought he was the piece you had to bring back. He brought you to the World Series. I mean,
yeah,
Murph helped in the postseason, but
so that short-term deal that they signed him to after 15, obviously they wanted Zobrist instead. Cespedes kind of fell into their laps, and that was okay, only in that it was basically a one-year deal. I'm remembering this right. He had an opt-out after 1 year, and he opted out. That's why he was a free agent again, right? Okay, fine. You're saying you want to Cespedes to a one-year deal because the market on him caved. Fine. The next year, when they were ready to commit. To this contract that is now an albatross, I never got it. And I still don't get it. I remember Mets people thinking openly that he was the kind of player that they were afraid might quit on them once they paid him, and they paid him anyway.
But look, he had the opportunity to quit when they signed him to the one-year deal, and then he opted out.
No, he did. Wait, what? He hasn't played more than 80-some games since he signed his long-term deal.
I think that there was a feeling that he just felt he had his mojo in this organization. He liked where he was. He liked where the spring training complex was.
He likes where he is, all right. His ranch in Vero Beach.
Yeah. He liked the situation.
Yeah.
So the feeling was before they signed that contract that, okay, we have a feeling he just likes it here. He feels comfortable in this situation. I don't think that a couple extra years of security is going to just bring him back to what he was at his worst in Boston or something like that.
And here we are.
Yeah. So, bottom line is, you're absolutely correct. That would have been the foresight that would have been the correct feeling to have. Like Andy Martino before the contract was signed, you are correct. But are you still able to see the side of it where it's like, yeah, I understand why they did it?
I think it's good that they were in a phase where they were ramping up, retaining their star, and trying to win the World Series.
I think it's good that they signed a star.
Yeah, but there were enough red flags with this guy. And, like, I'm not trying to kill him as hard as it's turning out. You get a lot of different opinions. First of all, I don't have a real sense for Yoenis Cespedes as a person because he doesn't really speak to the media. So everything most people get is kind of secondhand. I know that there are people that are really bothered by him and that organization, and there are people that really like him as a guy in that organization. So I don't know. So I'm not just saying, like, I'm not, like, being personal here. I'm just saying if you look at injury and performance and what has seemed like a weirdly long time to get back, which obviously some Mets people have been frustrated by and fans have been frustrated by, it's good that they signed a star, but what else could they have done? Yeah, it's just... It's not like you got to pay that guy $30 million a year still. And they're at a time when you can't trade him, and you should be a lot better off without him moving in the direction they're trying to move.
I just totally understand why they did it. This is a similarity between some of the contracts. And to a much lesser extent, I feel the same way about the Anthony Swarzak deal, because we were – at the winter meetings, I wasn't there, you were, but we were talking about how the Mets needed some sort of arm. There was this group of middle relievers and Brian Shaw and all those guys.
Who's been terrible.
Who's been terrible, as Swarzak has been.
Yes.
But so we were all thinking, okay, the Mets bullpen is a disaster. They need a middle reliever. They signed Swarzak, and a couple of us were like, I'm skeptical because he's had one good year, and otherwise he's been kind of a journeyman. But they signed somebody. They made something happen to try and ensure that a weakness became a strength.
Right.
And I'm sorry, but I can't do anything other than applaud that. Now, if it turns out to be the wrong decision with a couple guys, then obviously, like we have, you start to wonder how is their scouting department not seeing
It's the evaluation
coming.
Of who they're paying.
Yeah, the evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, is fair to criticize.
Yeah.
You can say, okay, why did Andy maybe hear or feel that Yoenis Cespedes may be a risky guy to give a long-term deal to, but the Mets still did it. Why did people think, oh, Anthony Swarzak, I don't know if he's the guy he was in 2017 or if he's the guy he was before 2017. They signed him anyway. So do you think that Cespedes and that contract in general is kind of a symbol for potential issues with player evaluation on the Mets side?
Well, the results would say, Cespedes, no, because that when once you get to, I mean, not no, but not as much, because once you get to a deal that's that big, you're talking about, it's bigger than just baseball ops. It's marketing, it's ownership, it's in any situation. This isn't about Mets ownership meddling. This is about the fact that when an organization looks at a star player, targets that player, says, we're going to make this guy the face of our team, our star, that's a decision with a lot of cooks in the kitchen. Swarzak is different. Swarzak is a bunch of scouts and assistant GMs looking at his pitch usage patterns on Fangraphs and from their scouting reports and saying, that suggests that 17 was not a fluke. But Cespedes is a different story. When owners are going to outlay that kind of money, I mean, they spent a lot of money on this guy, they're going to, it's going to be a bigger thing than that. Like David Wright, the David Wright contract, that wasn't a baseball decision. That's a no baseball operations person would have ever said in 2012, give David Wright an 8-year contract. But he's the face of the franchise. He's a good citizen. Yeah. So, you know, even the same with players that big, a lot of things come into play.
The Lakers were paying Kobe Bryant like $150 million a year in last years of his. And same thing with Derek Jeter. I mean, Derek Jeter was overpaid.
Making more than
his
baseball value.
Exactly. Yeah. Kobe Bryant, I was exaggerating with the actual number, but he was getting overpaid at the end of his career. That happens. It's not a good idea, but it happens.
And sometimes it is, because it's like, if you want a guy to retire in your uniform, in the case of Cespedes, if you think that he's proven that he can play in New York and you know how that's a rare skill, I get that. But
here would be my, I don't have a hot take about the Cespedes contract. I don't think you do either. I guess the one thing that
about reasoned conversation.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And the one thing that I would move on from it to say would be that I think the reason that Manny Machado signing him would be so unbelievably refreshing to this franchise is this is a guy who's just known to be a very good baseball player who's never played with the Mets. And if the Mets just came out of nowhere and gave him a huge contract and signed him, it would be awesome.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Because, think about David Wright's contract. Yeah. He was obviously here forever. He's the captain of your team. Yoenis Cespedes' contract was because he could play here. It was because he had the ranch and because he had a good relationship with people on the team, with some, and it just felt like the thing they had to do. This would just be like a, let's go get this guy because he's been great for another team. I don't care if he can play here. I don't care if he's got a history here. I don't care about his relationships. It would be like a, let's go get the guy.
It'd be amazing. That's why I keep saying do it. But I do think it's more fiction than
pipe
reality.
Dream.
Yeah, yeah. But it'd be really cool.
And it would be also, to all the people out there who don't want them to trade DeGrom, it would feel especially good for you. Because it would have been like, that's why I was clamoring. We had the opportunity to do this.
They do. And the thing about the Mets as currently constructed, it's such a weird season because they're not, okay, they are as bad as their record. Every team is what their record is.
Yes.
But they're not, it's such weird bad. They have more talent than the win total indicates. They can't, unless they're in Canada, they can't, or sometimes Miami, they can't win a freaking baseball game. They don't know how to play 9 innings, but they've got talented players on their roster.
I agree with you. I don't think they're as talented as you think they are. But
you're wrong.
I mean, look around the diamond, Andy. I mean, we're not talking about terrible players, but we're not talking about stars.
They've got enough where if you play your cards right over one offseason, you can have a competitive team next year.
I don't think this team is currently constituted and constructed is going to improve with time.
Well, over this season, you mean?
I don't think next year.
No, you have to make changes. I'm saying that if you've got those four pitchers, the two that I said they're not going to trade and the two that they might trade, you keep them all and you have, there's a lot of ifs here, but just those guys, Conforto, Nimmo, and just there's more talent there than in the 2011-12, just teams that are supposed to be bad while you're rebuilding. There's more talent there, and you can build up or you can break down.
I'm sick of ifs, honestly. That's my main.
Well,
it all comes down to that. I'm sick of ifs.
And they've of course had too many.
They had too many ifs, back-to-back seasons, back-to-back seasons of us all offseason saying the Mets could be good.
Yeah, absolutely.
We knew the Yankees going into the season were going to be good. How about that as a feeling? I mean, that is a good feeling.
Hey, yes, that would be better.
To know your team is
that would
going
be better.
Be
the Mets are in a bad place right now and may remain there for quite a while. But I'm just saying, like, as we continue to return to in this conversation several times, you don't know how bad it is, and sometimes teams surprise you both by being good and being bad. Like, the Washington Nationals and the New York Mets this year are both way worse than they were supposed to be. What the hell's going on there? Who's a team that's way better? The Atlanta Braves, the Philadelphia Phillies. And there's so many horrible teams in the league and will continue to be. It is hard to watch a baseball game with two good teams. So if you, I mean, mediocrity has never been better rewarded. So I just don't see, I'm still in the position of why wait 4 or 5 years to be good when the league is so mediocre.
All right, we gotta get to some other stuff here. We got a tweet from Angry Mets.
Is that the Cespedes conversation?
Yeah, who tweets at us often saying, this is something that annoys me. Why do New York fans get labeled as the smartest fans in baseball? I find this to be flat out untrue. Is it pandering from players and media? Andy, you've been around other organizations and fans. What's your take?
Well, I think I actually responded to your tweet. My take is that if any of us were that smart, we'd be talking about something else. Fans, media, we're all kind of like bottom of the barrel in society.
Yeah.
But given that, if we're trying to look at fan bases relative to one another, I think it's hard to generalize. There's some bright minds in this fan base, and there's some dummies. But that would be the case with any group of people.
I just have no... There's no
I'll tell you one thing. My experience, the only other city I've covered baseball in is Philadelphia, and I have found generally the level of discourse around New York baseball to be at a higher level than Philadelphia baseball. That's an Eagles town. They got really into the Phillies for a number of years when the Phillies were very exciting. And it was a very kind of black and white, often way of looking at the game. Really, really homery, which I don't see here as much. Like, they would boo Ryan Howard for striking out. But if I wrote a reasoned column saying Ryan Howard is a little overrated, I would get eviscerated. Like, it's very... when I was in Philly, too, like, a lot of the readers assumed I was a Mets fan because I had happened to have worked at the New York Daily News prior. It's like... There's a level of sophistication that I do get plenty of times here. Everyone who engages with this podcast is pretty much
We've had
totally
great people,
interesting
writing,
conversations,
very good questions,
conversations like points that have made us rethink our positions on things. But I find it hard to generalize. Like, are people in New York more smart than people in? Did I just say more smart? Day after 4th of July, people.
So
then people, and I'm saying, like, only, you're talking about a broad swath of population with a wide range of intelligence in any case.
And quickly before I move on, the only fan base that I feel like I have an even knowledgeable take on would be Boston, just because I have a lot of very close friends who are Boston sports fans. The one thing that I will say about them is that they seem to care only about their teams. They love their teams, but they only care about them. Like, and I've read that their ratings on national games that don't involve their teams aren't great either. So Boston sports fans love their teams, care about them, don't really care about anyone else. I think New York fans are good about caring about the game and watching other people's teams and stuff.
It would be horrible to play for the Red Sox, other than that you're rich and famous, because that team, that city seems so laser-focused in a critical way on that team. You know what the thing about New York, too, is that's nice is that, like, all of Philadelphia is focused on the Eagles or the Phillies if they're good. All of Boston feels like it's, or New England feels like it's focused on the Red Sox during baseball season. But in New York, like, 95% of the population probably has no idea who Gleyber Torres is or Jacob deGrom. Because they're at the museum or they're
busier
in the club or they're in here, whatever else, or they're in Wall, you know what I mean? So it's a little more chill for people, I think.
So you have an article on Mets blog or SNY.TV, lingering bad blood since last year's failed deals between Walker and Bruce with the Yankees and the Mets.
Oh, this is kind of an interesting thing to dig into.
What's their relationship in the front
office?
There's
been so much talk about the Mets and the Yankees and would they deal. So I just digging into that a little bit. I just have picked up on more than I expected. A lingering bad feelings about the teams thought they had a trade for Jay Bruce. They thought they had a trade for Neil Walker last year. And the Yankees really were not happy with the fact that those players ended up going elsewhere and were left with a sense that it wouldn't be easy to deal with the Mets going forward. There's bad blood that goes back to There was a situation several years ago, some of you probably will remember, where the Yankees couldn't play in Scranton for a year for the AAA team. They wanted to play in Newark. The Mets have territorial rights to minor leagues. That's how it works. Like, the Yankees needed the Mets' permission to play in Newark. The Mets would not agree. The Yankees AAA team, which Nelson Figueroa was a part of, had to play on the road for an entire season. They didn't have a whole boat. So there's things where they haven't had good relations in dealing with each other, which goes way, way, way beyond the fact that Omar Minaya and Brian Cashman are personal friends and have mutual respect. So those are things that really would have to be surmounted if the Yankees and the Mets were to ever make a deal. And that's why it makes it so hard to imagine them making a deal for a big player.
There's already reasons.
If you can't agree on Neil Walker.
Yeah, beyond relationships, there's reasons why the Mets and Yankees wouldn't want to make deals.
Yeah, now there is a perfect match on paper for Jacob DeGrom to the Yankees. That's why it's been on talk radio and our airwaves for weeks and weeks and weeks, because logically there's something to talk about. But I was at Yankee Stadium last Friday. Brian Cashman was on the field in a media scrum. He was saying, I don't know if you remember this, he was like saying, I would deal with the Mets. I would deal with anybody. Omar and I are friends. And I thought he was really kind of trolling the Mets there and laying down the gauntlet publicly to say, in his perspective, Andy Martino's not weighing in here, but Brian Cashman, I believe, was saying, I'm here. You guys, cool? Can you deal with me? You know, because I'm here.
Right.
And that's sort of where it is that sort of passive-aggressive push and pull between the sides. I've heard Mets people say, we would deal with the Yankees. I've heard Yankees people say, yeah, right. It'd be interesting. And I think Omar being there helped somewhat, changes it somewhat, because he's so universally respected. And has a personal relationship with Cashman, as I said. But still, it's a complicated dynamic between those two teams. It's not a made-up thing that the teams don't like each other.
Here's a voice note we got on Shay Hay.
Shay Hay.
SNY.tv/SheyAnything. Here you go.
Hey, guys. How are you doing today? This is Robin. I'm in New York, and I've been a Mets fan since 1962. I have a huge announcement to make today. I can promise you that on Saturday, Jacob DeGrom will be traded. Absolutely, without question. If you do not believe me, check eBay at approximately 8 p.m. Bye, guys.
My phone rang during that call. Sorry, Robin. That underscores the point that some of you are trying to make about me.
Because it's a Jacob DeGrom bobblehead situation, correct? His bobblehead day is this weekend.
Hey, I hear you, Robin. I hear you. And I hear that history, but I don't see it. If Jacob DeGrom were going to be traded by this weekend, there'd have to be a hell of a lot of legwork done that hasn't been done yet. Weirder things have happened.
Saturday night, I met up with a couple friends.
You know, why don't you talk about the 4th of July instead? It's more current.
Okay, I agree with that. 4th of July, Andy, you had the day off, correct?
I did.
I did as well. Drove down the Jersey Shore. I made dinner. Relaxed at the beach. It was fantastic.
That's nice. That's nice.
Yeah.
Mine was nice, too. I had a wonderful time in my town with my family and friends out there. One quick story I'll tell is that, so my town in the park at 9 a.m. has like a series of races. I don't know if it's 50 or a 40 or whatever, like a sprint race, right? And the kids run it, and it's cute. Like, they get put on a number, like a marathon-style number and stuff. My son didn't want to run it this year, because he's really competitive and he finished near the bottom last year, so he didn't want. He's like, so we had. And I was gonna make him.
He's got his dad's athleticism.
Wait till you see where I'm going with this. So then there's a race that's like it's like ages 3 and 4, or ages 5 and 6, and then there's a race at ages like 11 to 99. They call it. It's the last one.
Just a bunch of adults.
Yeah, when people are pretty much scattered.
And 11-year-old kids.
So it was like 10 people, whoever's like stragglers. But as I was. I've never felt older than in the story I'm about to tell. As I was walking past what happened to me, the starting line, as they announced this race, so I was like, I wasn't planning on running it. I was right standing there, and I was like, hey, it's a holiday. I'm a fun-loving guy. I'm going to run this race. So as I stepped up to the starting line, I suddenly became aware that my hamstrings felt tight. I hadn't stretched at all.
Wow, Masahiro Tanaka.
Yeah, I was like, this is a bad idea. And then the whistle went off. And I went, and I was like, I'm going to try to win this thing. So I went full bore, like from 0 to 100, stupidly. Like I didn't do anything right. I didn't, and I really didn't need to stretch. So as I got, I don't know, 10, 15 feet, I was like, my hamstrings are cramping up, legitimately. And then, I don't know if you've ever fallen down, but what happens is...
Weird thing about me, I've never fallen down
the weirdest
in my life.
Thing. Oh, and I learned is that it might take 3/4 of a second to fall down, but in your head, there's like 3 to 4 minutes of, I'm not stable, I'm not sturdy, I'm going down, I might go down, I'm going, and next thing you know, there's like grass in your mouth. So I fell, and everyone was like, ooh, it wasn't fun, it wasn't charming, it was extremely awkward.
It was sad.
It was sad. And I make eye contact with this guy I know in the neighborhood, and he's just like shaking his head.
Hey, Glenn at Animating Sports, if you're listening to this, just do us the favor. That's all.
I went down.
You want to make people happy? Just make that art.
Yeah.
Make a video of Andy
falling.
The sad dad racing a bunch of kids whose hammies get tight
I
after 10
up.
Feet.
It's terrible.
And he Masahiro Tanaka's his way. Halfway through a race and then falls.
And then
what a sad thing to...
And it got sadder at the end because I got up and I felt like I got to make this as, like, a little less uncomfortable so make people think they didn't have to call the ambulance or something. So I finished. I jogged to the finish line. As I crossed the finish line, this nice lady gave me a blue ribbon because I finished. She's like, hey, congratulations.
Hey, buddy.
And then my 6-year-old son ran up to me.
Congratulations on making it to the finish line.
He goes, Daddy, why'd you fall?
That is so, I mean, by the way, for anyone who doesn't know this, Andy had a barbecue 2 summers ago at his house, and some work people went. I went and I taught your son how to play baseball. He had previously never known.
See, that's not fair. We take swings all
like,
the time.
Wow, I've never done this before. It was like, yeah.
Now we're getting personal. Anyway,
All right, that's it for us. This is the Shea Anything Podcast, Andy Falls. thanks for listening. Subscribe, rate, and review us if you would. Thanks.